stamp, stamp, stamp. Go all the stamps.
What do they go?
Stamp, stamp, stamp. Go all the stamps.
Because they're notaries.
Getting the official 21 stamp salute.
Because they're notaries. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Parks and Rewatch. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Joy.
And today is our very last episode. We are diving into Season 7, Episode 12, One Last Ride.
It is the final. We have made it.
We've made it. 7 seasons. 3 years of podcasting.
100-some episodes.
And as of today, it will be, I think, 73 episodes of the after show. That's a lot of time.
That is a lot of time. If I would have had more time, Bree asked if I could throw together some stats about, like, how many dives did we do? Mm-hmm. How many cumulative hours did we record? How many, you know, all of those things. And I did not have time. If anybody wants to do that for me, go for it.
That would be super fun to see.
Okay.
Possibly a little bit scary too, but fun. Mostly fun.
I know. So many hours of my life has been spent on Wikipedia.
That's kind of my favorite type of fun, is when you're at like a 95% fun, 5% fear, 90% fun, 10% fear kind of space.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine.
That's the good spot.
Yep. You got it. All right, so I just realized before we hit record that I forgot to write an episode of the day plot synopsis, so I'm going to improv that. Joe, what style should I do it in?
You know, I really like your newscaster type of voice.
Okay, I can do that. Beep, 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 beep. This just in, this week's episode of Parks and Rewatch is brought to you by It's the End. It's the end of what? It's the end of life as we know it. Everybody finds their own end. Leslie and Ben end up with I almost just said social security guards. Wow. Secret security guards. It's on my head because Bree and I need to go to the social security office and change our name. beep, 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 beep. What else? Andy and April have a small child they call Jack, which is the tamest name that they could call him.
Chicken and waffles.
What are the other things? I just swore. My bad. maybe edit that out. Or chicken and waffles.
Yeah. That's perfect. That's perfect. We can bring the chicken and waffles full circle.
Time for that to come all the way back. This episode is basically just full of a lot of time travel, fun things, sentimental moments, and deep laughter. Brought to you in part by Parks and Rewatch.
Okay, you were close, and while you were doing it, I got the idea. So okay. I would love for you, if you're up for it, to give it another go as okay. Purd Hapley.
As Purd Hapley. Oh my goodness.
How would Purd Hapley give the synopsis for this episode?
The news is the thing I'm doing right now. Did you know? Oh my gosh, I put so much thought into how to be Purd, and I haven't actually come up with anything, because he just states the thing and then states it again.
Mm-hmm.
This is the end of the end, is the thing I will say at the end. Okay, I'm feeling uncomfortable. Can we move on?
Yes, that was great, though.
Oh, I wish I could have prepared that better. That would have been literally perfect.
It was literally perfect.
Okay, well, thank you. And now it's time for some behind the scenes and trivia. All right, IMDb said, this took me by absolute surprise. One idea for the finale was that the show would reveal how each character would eventually die. Chris Pratt actually pitched potential deaths for Andy and April, with Andy dying from being locked inside a hot car like a dog, and April dying from a broken heart shortly after. The entire death angle was eventually scrapped as it was deemed too dark for the show. If it would have ended dark.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know if I could do that.
I think people would have been really upset.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
it could have potentially been funny, but I think it would have clashed so much with the mood of the show
mm-hmm.
that people just wouldn't have accepted it.
Yeah, I think you're right. The canoe that Ron Swanson rides in, Lucky Boy, was actually crafted by Nick Offerman himself for YouTube maker and TV show host Jimmy DiResta. Woo! I just want to ride in it, and I want to go canoeing now.
I figured when I saw it that that was an Offerman handmade canoe. I just didn't know who it was for.
Absolutely beautiful. In the 2025 party scene, you can hear Andy's song 5,000 Candles in the Wind in the background.
Naturally.
I mean, your point that you made at the beginning of the series is that when they use music, they mm-hmm. use it really well.
Mm-hmm.
That happened again here.
Yeah, they don't use it often, but they use it very intentionally.
When Andy is handing out candy, one of the kids is dressed as Star-Lord. Chris Pratt played Star-Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy in 2014. Fun facts. Both parts of the finale are dedicated to Harris Whittles, who died on February 19th, 2015. The final shot, or the final words that you see at the end of the episode is, "We love you, Harris." John Ralphio tells Leslie that he's always loved her. Ben Schwartz, the actor who plays John Ralphio, was originally cast as Leslie's love interest, Dave Sanderson.
Wow.
Could you imagine?
I can't. I can't.
He's such a goofy character, and to have kind of like the straight role,
mm-hmm.
The not necessarily like gender straight or sexual orientation straight, but like just buttoned together kind of flat character.
Like your stereotypical straight man.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Very matter of fact and kind of boring as like intentionally boring. And just, I mean, knowing the flamboyant puckish figure that is John Ralphio, it is so hard to imagine Ben Schwartz playing Dave. It really is.
Yep. Anna just said, "Could you imagine their kids?" I don't know. Some things are a little beyond my imagination power.
Some things are beyond all of our imagination.
Yeah, like what a casino in Tajikistan would look like. The finale was written by Amy Poehler and Michael Schur. Michael Schur wanted Lucy Lawless, who played Diane, to return for the final season, but couldn't get the schedules lined up for that, which I feel really sad about. I would have liked to see Lucy in the finale as Diane.
Yeah, same.
Okay, this one blew my mind. John Daly played the drunk in the slide in the pilot episode and plays the man who wants the swing fix in his local park in the finale. Does that not blow your mind?
It does. I love that detail because that's one thing I don't think I ever would have noticed on my own. It's just not one of those things you necessarily pay attention to. And it's one of those little things that the Parks and Rec writers have done over and over again. They throw these little details in there that are solely there for the purpose of fun. They weren't necessary to include at all. And they kind of leave these little Easter eggs for future watches that make it fun to keep coming back to the show.
Yeah, I love the fan base that has dedicated itself to finding things like this and posting it so then I can reread it to everybody else.
Absolutely.
When swearing in Gary as Pawnee's mayor, Councilwoman Brandy Max claims she starred in over 11,000 adult films in the past 2 years. For this to be possible, she would have had to shoot more than 15 separate films a day. I mean,
No comment.
No comment. Reddit had some really good thoughts. Somebody named Really Creative said, "Oh no, which one is president? Oh my God, which one, which one?" I love actually that they left that ambiguous. We don't know. Is it Ben or is it Leslie?
Yeah, I read that they left it ambiguous intentionally. I wish I could remember, but it was actually to sort of pay homage to another show that sort of left a big detail like that ambiguous. They purposefully wanted it to be unclear which one of them wound up being president. And I actually read a theory somewhere that they both were president at different times.
Oh, that would be really interesting.
Which I could also get behind.
I would get behind that. Yeah. Yeah. House of Pain 55 said, John Ralphio's lack of character development is an undervalued part of this show.
Yes.
How do you feel about that statement, Joe?
I love that. It's perfect. Yeah. Like I've said before, because he's not a character designed to have an arc. He's just like an air hockey puck that comes into the scene mm-hmm. and bounces off everybody and then flies off screen just as fast. And that's all he needs to be. And that's what's great about him.
Yep. I love how you described that. L.A. Mantle said, the way Ben stared at the camera reminded me that there was still a documentary-style film crew behind the scenes. On top of that, I'm actually glad we never learned why they were being filmed in the first place.
Yeah, I would agree.
Space City 9 said, I wish Adam Sandberg was a ranger. And you know what? I feel the same.
Same.
I would have loved to see the contrast of an Adam Sandberg ranger with Ron.
Yes, that would have been great.
Would have made me very happy.
To see Ron try to walk a mile in his size sevens.
Love that you just know these random quotes. All right, next part's yours.
Yeah, so seeing that this is the series finale of Parks and Recreation we're talking about today, and it is our series finale, the series finale of Parks and Rewatch, I wanted to just take a second. We spent a little time in the last episode talking about penultimate episodes, and so I wanted to take a second to talk about series finales, specifically series finales, not season finales. I wanted to talk about some of the worst, and then I wanted to talk about some of the best. These are my opinion, and it's not really an exhaustive list. It's kind of the ones that floated to the top immediately when I started thinking about it, which makes sense to me because those are the ones that stuck in my memory for either having really good finales or having really poor finales for different reasons. So starting off, I'm going to talk about some of the worst, a few of my nominations for worst series finales of all time. First up, I have Dexter, Showtime's Dexter. I loved that show through like season 4, and then it started downhill. It got worrisome, and by the end, I think they destroyed any goodwill that they had with their fan base. And I maintained enough of a shred of hope to watch the revival that they did, the sort of one-off series that they did, hoping that they would right some of their wrongs. And they did the same thing again. It started out with some promise, and then probably about two-thirds of the way through that limited series, I just got the same sinking feeling that the writers don't know what they're doing here, and they're going to just trash all over the fan base again. And it did. It ended so stupidly and so pointlessly. I remember just sitting angry for probably about 10 to 15 minutes after I got done watching both of the series finales for Dexter. So Dexter is on that list. Next up is one that hurts. It hurt then, it hurt to this day, and that is Chuck. Chuck is one of my favorite series of all time. I think it's like Community is a testament to the power of the fan base. The fan base rescued that show over and over again, just by clamoring for its renewal when it was on network TV. And unfortunately, it seemed like the writers of that show didn't quite know how to land the plane either, especially if you were a fan of Sarah's character. I feel like they really did her dirty in the end, and they left the show on a really on a note that was more bitter than sweet. They ended the series by ending it really ambiguously. And I just saw Kiki in the chat. Bad ending 19 kids and counting. Oh, that was good. That was good.
True, though. Oh, good job, Kendall.
Oh, that was on point. Also see Anna T in the chat saying we watch Community because of you, Joe, and our lives are better for it. I am so glad. Community is fantastic. If you haven't watched it yet, you're missing out. Community is so good.
I agree. That is one I have seen.
Yes. Yes. It's and you like Community, right?
I do.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. So continuing on to round out my list of the worst series finales, this is going to hurt Game of Thrones. If you were a fan of Game of Thrones, I never watched it while it was airing. So by the time I got around to it, I knew what was coming. And the sad thing I think about Game of Thrones is the writing and everything about it, from the shooting, the acting, it was all great up until about the last season. And then to see again what seemed like the writers and showrunners just make completely irrational decisions and just kind of crap all over their fan base. It's just kind of sad. So those are some series finales that I felt like were some of the worst that I can remember, some of the worst and just sort of the public consciousness. And so I wanted to start with the worst so we could go to the best. And I want to start off my list of the best with my all-time favorite series finale of any show ever, and that is Justified. If you've never watched the show Justified, you're missing out. Trust me, it's so good. It's actually coming back for a limited series that starts this summer.
How excited are you?
So excited. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. And I love this quote that I found that I wanted to read about the series finale of Justified. It's from The Ringer. This article was written by the staff. It's on a list of the best series finales of all time. And it says, yeah, I'm going to level with you. I only vaguely remember the other elements of the Justified finale. No idea how that final season Sam Elliott villain arc got resolved. No idea how Boyd wound up in prison. No idea what the gun hipster's deal was. No idea what happened to really anyone else. But I remember we dug coal together because it's the best line on any TV show ever made. So there's that. That really sums up my feelings about the finale, because I realized when I read that, I don't remember a lot of that stuff either. I didn't even remember Sam Elliott was in the final season, and I love that show.
Isn't Sam Elliott Eagleton Ron?
Yes. Yes, he is.
All right. All right. Good, I made that connection.
Good episodic memory.
Thanks. I have my one positive for the day. Ta-da.
So I totally forgot he was in it, but That's not the staying power of that finale. The staying power of that finale is the relationship between the two main characters, the protagonist and the antagonist, Raylan and Boyd, and their relationship, the way that they played off of each other. I've mentioned it before, but Walton Goggins, his character, Boyd Crowder, was only supposed to be in the show for the first episode of the first season. He was supposed to be killed off in the first episode. And then he showed up and he inhabited the character so much, and his character had so much chemistry with Timothy Oliphant's Raylan that they wrote him into the entire rest of the show. So their relationship dynamic was what made that show work, and it's what made the series finale amazing.
Wow.
So that's Justified. I have a couple more here that I'll mention. Next up is The Office. I think The Office has one of the best series finales of all time. And I think The Office is probably my go-to example of how to land the plane if it's an emergency landing. Mm-hmm. Because the show was struggling a little bit coming into its final season. I think goodwill toward the show had kind of started to die off. The show had never reached the heights that it had while Michael Scott was on the show, Steve Carell's Michael Scott. And so I think that they were wise to end it when they did. And the finale just hit all the right notes, including bringing certain characters back, wrapping up character arcs. So I think The Office is a fantastic example of that. And then third and finally on this list is the series finale of Parks and Recreation. I think probably better than any show I can think of, Parks and Recreation pulled off the feel-good finale. If it does nothing else well, which it does other things well, but if it does nothing else well, the finale encapsulated and concentrated, I think, what people liked the show for, which is for the feeling, for that good, warm, fuzzy, connected feeling. I think where Parks and Rec went right in recognizing we're not going to be sort of the awkward mockumentary that The Office is, and they veered toward focusing on the relationships between the characters, they then double down on those things for the series finale, and it really works.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one.
So, ta-da, that's it.
Yeah, we had some chatter going on the side. Bree said her best finale ever was 6 feet under. And Ashley said, I'm guessing that's because they finally hit the 6 foot mark in their dig. Do you get the pun?
I mean, I get the pun. I never watched 6 feet under. So
I thought it was a funny pun. Bree said, oh, Bree's a little mad at you right now that you haven't watched it.
I'm going back up to type.
Okay.
I'm bad at this multitasking thing.
I'm good at it. Hey, ADHD, welcome to the show. Bree said they gave the audience exactly what we wanted, and it was so satisfying. Very heavy, but a beautiful show. It's about a family that runs a mortuary.
Okay.
We also had a couple. My favorite was The Office. Ashley pointed out that Schitt's Creek ending was also really good. I said, I don't know. I forget what I've seen, so I don't know what my favorite is. I'm just on board. And then Bree said, but which Survivor Series ending is your favorite? I don't know. All of them.
And there's a lot.
All 44 of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Survivor is a titan of television.
Titan.
A titan.
Titan. Okay. It's now time for some dives. Dives, dives. Up top, we're talking about comfort food, Perfect Day, Luddite, and beef shortage. In the boofs, we're talking about En Vogue, door knocker earrings, Tajikistan, and graduation hoods. Joe, what are you most excited to hear about?
Comfort food.
Once again, you have ding, 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 won the prize, because that's the first topic out of the gate.
First topic.
Okay, comfort food, because Leslie brought comfort food scrapbooks and tissues, which did you notice you brought a pallet of tissues? If I counted, that's maybe 72 to 84 boxes of tissues.
Totally reasonable.
That's enough for that whole building for like 6 months, probably. Okay, so Wikipedia defined comfort food as food that provides a nostalgic or sentimental value to someone and may be characterized by its high caloric nature, high carbohydrate level, or simple preparation. Why you gotta talk about my comfort food like that? Just know. The nostalgia may be specific to an individual, or it may apply to a specific culture. The term comfort food has been traced back to at least 1966 when the Palm Beach Post used it in a story. Quote, adults, when under severe emotional stress, turn to what could be called comfort food. Food associated with the security of childhood, like mother's poached egg or famous chicken soup, end quote. According to somebody they quoted in the article, COVID-19 pandemic that hit the world in 2020 further strengthened people's need for comfort food that evokes nostalgia and the feeling of belonging. I absolutely adored the article that was here. I'm going to post it to everybody in the chat. At the bottom of the Wikipedia article are comfort foods from nations all around the world.
Oh, that's cool.
It was amazing to just look through and see how different comfort food looks based on your culture. So looking at the UK, which was fun for me to look at because Bree and I just went there last year, they have something called bangers and mash, which is just funny to me. It's sausage and potatoes. bangers and mash. They have cottage pie. They have all kinds of savory pies. They have what's called a jacket potato, which they call a baked potato. It's a jacket potato.
I mean, that makes sense if you think about it.
Still got his jacket on, you know? There were just so many interesting things. On the French list was, of course, French onion soup, which I haven't made that in forever. It's time to make some French onion soup when it's fall again. I'll wait. Germany, I loved just how angry the names sound. Like Saumagen, Sauerbraten, Rotgrütz. They make me happy. I don't know what any of them are, but they're great. There was a whole section for Hong Kong, which... like cart noodles. It's an a la carte noodle dish traditionally sold using carts. I want one. Macaroni in broth. Yes, please. A pineapple bun. A type of pastry that looks like a pineapple. Yeah, I'll absolutely eat that. Did you see any on that list? Did you open it up?
I did not. I was distracted by the dog.
Oh, it happens. Yeah, Cam. Cam grew up in Hong Kong. And loves noodles.
That's amazing.
Cam, would you post a recipe of that type of noodle? That would be fun. In Japan, mochi is a thing. In the Philippines, adobo is a thing. I have a great recipe for Filipino adobo chicken that makes my heart so happy. Anyway, what is your comfort food, Joe?
I have a few, and they're a little bit eclectic because... I do have Southern roots. I was born and spent a fair portion of my childhood in Mississippi. And so some of it is deep South, like Mississippi comfort food. So grits. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love grits, whether they're cheese grits or whether they just have a little butter. I love grits. Fried okra. Man.
I like the fried part.
Fried okra just that takes me right back. Or fried green tomatoes. Love fried green tomatoes. And then it's just some things that are probably more universal, like Kraft mac and cheese, specifically Kraft mac and cheese.
Bree's favorite is the spirals.
The spirals are dope. Don't sleep on the spirals.
That would probably hurt. Just, you know.
Unless you cooked them first, but then that would probably be a little gross.
Then they just stick to you. Starchy.
Coleslaw, for some reason. Coleslaw is a comfort food. Not sure why, but I just love coleslaw. I see somebody having a reaction to that. I get it. Coleslaw's a little out there.
Kendall says absolutely not.
But then just like, I don't know, anything hearty. You know,
hearty.
Like chili, like my homemade chili, especially if it's fall, big time comfort food. Yeah, stuff like that.
Any pie that I make for you?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I still dream about that cheddar apple pie sometimes.
You should. Okay, we had some comfort foods listed in our chat. Ashley said her favorite comfort food is chili cheese fries. Got potatoes, cheese, and saucy chili goodness. It's the perfect combo. Cam said anything noodles because she just loves noodles. Kendall said hers is potato chips dipped in baked beans or pulled pork or mini weenies.
Ooh.
I love them mini weenies. They are my favorite. Brooke said seafood gumbo. Lisa said candy or pie or both. Let's see. Scrolling down through all of the endings. Dim sum from Ashley. Kiki said, again, potato chips dipped in baked beans. Mac and cheese. Yes, Carolyn. Yes. Bree said hamburger helper. LOL. Ashley said Japanese curry. I need to try that. Kendall also said anything her dad cooks for her. Rachel said it's hard to choose. Pho, applesauce spice cake. What? I want an applesauce spice cake with coffee and chocolate icing.
I think I've had that before.
It's an old family recipe. Is it a secret recipe? Because I want to try that.
Is this a secret?
secret tunnels. And yeah, so mine are chicken tenders with mac and cheese and peas. I'm obsessed with peas. I don't really know why, but I love them. I also love cereal. I love frozen peas by themselves, which I've gotten ridiculed for several times. I am obsessed with beef stroganoff and pot roast and a good burger.
Absolutely. Yes to all that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any more to say on that before we move on to perfect days?
I think Ashley, was it Ashley? I lost it in the chat. Somebody said, Bree. Bree said hamburger helper. And that too is just one of those like direct lines to childhood nostalgia for me. Doesn't matter what kind, any kind of hamburger helper just takes me right back.
There you go. Taking it back to that comfort food. Now it's time to transition to what does our perfect day look like? Because Leslie said today should be perfect and every perfect day involves crying uncontrollably. Not for me. I mean, it's cathartic to cry uncontrollably, but I don't know
what I want to do it like on every perfect day, you know?
No, I could only have a tiny bit of perfect days then. I saw a website called lifehack.org, 50 small things that make up a perfect day. Everybody pick a number between 1 and 50, post it in the chat, and I'll read those only. Joe, what does your perfect day look like?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of general things, so it's not necessarily dependent on location or activity, if that makes sense. I think you could have a perfect day kind of no matter where you are or what exactly you're doing. So I think my perfect day starts with getting to wake up without an alarm clock, whenever that is, not having to rush in the morning. And then getting to do something outside, getting to do something creative, getting to do something by myself, getting to do something with my people, and eating good food.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
That's a pretty darn good day right there.
Ooh, I just got a huge compliment from my sister.
What'd she say?
She said her comfort food is my apple cake.
What?
Which,
look at you living the dream.
That's a big deal because I made that when she was out here visiting for my brother Jacob's birthday. And that was the first time I'd ever tried that recipe.
Yes, nailed it on the first try.
So I'll take that. I feel gassed up right now. You know what I mean?
What are you going to do with all that energy?
Probably like podcast some more.
All right. We got some numbers in. Bree said number 33 of this list of 50. 33 is walk barefoot. Ashley said number 9, which is connect to yourself by using a journal. Write, draw, make collages, let your mind wander. Cam said 12. Do yoga. Andy said 11, which is take a walk in nature. Carolyn said 17, which is put some fresh flowers in the room you spend time in the most. Kendall said 25, which is read an inspiring quote and incorporate it into your day. Susan said 13, which is make a to-do list to help you achieve your main goal for the day and stick to it. So those are just a few from that list. If you happen to be a patron, which you can do for only $1 a month now as our Pawnee interim mayor.
Yeah.
You can see the full list of 50. So there you go. My perfect day is eating lovely things, moving slowly, putzing a bit even. Putzing is...
Ooh.
Do you know what putzing is?
I'm guessing it's sort of the same in the same neighborhood as faffing around.
Yeah, faffing. Faffing and putzing and
faffing, just, putzing.
I just follow my whims.
General lollygagging.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Doing a huggle muggle. Mm-hmm. Bringing it back. I love to read, play Minecraft, drink coffee, play with my dogs, chat with my wife. play some games that I hopefully beat her at, because y'all know we have a book and we keep scoring it and it tallies up all year long. And she beat me last year, but she ain't going to beat me this year. That's all I have to say about that. And I love eating ice cream sandwiches, which we're going to do after this recording. Upstartist.tv said that most people want four things: connection, autonomy, progress, and a peaceful state of mind. That sounds like a perfect day to me. Mm-hmm. Rachel said her perfect day is no obligations, schedules, and timelines. Spent with people she loves, getting to be outdoors somewhere beautiful, like the English countryside, where I get to eat delicious food that you don't have to cook. I agree, Rachel. I agree. Any comments on that, Joe, before we move on?
Just that I think looking at that list, I'm already out.
What do you mean?
If that list is, if I have to do all the things on that list to accomplish having a perfect day, because that's already too much.
It is a lot.
It is a lot. And some of the things are specific. Like, I would have to go buy flowers. And so already I feel like I feel too lazy to do that. Like,
unless you have a garden outside.
Which is true. But if I'm too lazy to go buy flowers, I'm probably too lazy to have a garden for them. So
it's also interesting. This says 50 small things, but these are kind of big things.
They kind of are. And some of them are like, lower your expectations.
Get out of the house and explore your neighborhood. See, I like my house.
See everything as an opportunity to learn and grow. and like, some of them are hard to quantify if I've actually done them or not. Like, do your best. Did I do my best in having this perfect day?
Number 46 is don't quit. Make baby steps. How do I make baby steps? Do I make the baby step?
I would interpret that literally as you take tiny steps everywhere you go.
I mean, it feels like What About Bob to me, where he's like, you know, baby steps to the elevator, baby steps, you know. Have you seen What About Bob?
You know, that's one where you've got me beat. I have not seen What About Bob.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Whatever. It's fine. Let's move on. Let's talk about Luddites. Because Ethel says, we've gone digital. Get with the times, you Luddite. Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines Luddite as one of a group of early 19th century English workmen destroying labor-saving machinery as a protest. Or broadly, a Luddite is one who is opposed to especially technological change. Merriam-Webster had this little, did you know? Said, long before your Luddite friend was waxing poetic about how blissful it is to not have a smartphone, Luddites were protesting the textile machinery that was slowly replacing them. It was toward the end of 1811, in the vicinity of Nottingham, England, when handicraftsmen formed organized bands and began to riot for the destruction of the new machinery. Their name is of uncertain origin, but it may be connected to a probably mythical person named Ned Ludd. That poor boy, Ned Ludd.
Ned Ludd.
According to an unsubstantiated account in George Pellew's Life of Lord Sidmouth from Sidmouth? Sidmouth. Either way. From 1847, Ned Ludd was a Leicestershire? I should just say it like this. Leicestershire villager of the late 1700s who, in a fit of rage, rushed into a stocking weaver's house and destroyed his equipment. Subsequently, his name was proverbially connected with machinery destruction. With the onset of the information age, Luddite gained a broader sense, describing anyone who shuns new technology. Which, the beauty of Ethel Beavers calling Leslie a Luddite.
Yeah,
that's great. Is beautiful. That is beautiful. That just makes me very happy. Any thoughts on Luddites before I move on?
I think that's one of those terms that I had what I'll call a context clues idea of what it meant, but I never actually heard the origin. So that's really interesting.
Super fascinating. So one of my friends, Artsy Lisa, is a instructional designer, and she loves to chat with ChatGPT all the time about her topics. So I figured I would pull an Artsy Lisa today and talk to ChatGPT about, could the country run out of beef? Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
So first thing it said, I really didn't need to be more specific, but it said it's unlikely we would run out of beef. The beef industry is a large and robust industry with many farmers and ranchers, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, let me retry my question. What would it take for us to run out of beef? And so ChatGPT said, for the U.S. to run out of beef, there would have to be a significant and sustained disruption to the beef supply chain. This would be caused by a number of factors, including disease outbreaks, natural disasters, supply chain disruptions, economic factors. And however, it's important to note that these scenarios are unlikely to occur in isolation and would have to happen on a large scale over a sustained period of time to lead to a shortage of beef in the U.S. Additionally, there are many alternative sources of protein available, such as chicken, pork, and plant-based proteins, which should help to mitigate any shortage of beef. So hopefully Ron will be okay. Carolyn said, running out of meat? See pandemic.
That's funny.
All right. Any comments on that before I move on?
I think ChatGPT is so funny. I too enjoy having conversations with it from time to time.
Like how you have conversations with scammers that text you?
Yes. Yes.
I love when you post those.
I am basically sometimes the John Ralphio of my own life. I feel like when I mess with scammers, I inhabit a very John Ralphio-esque spirit within myself.
Very puckish.
Very puckish. I love that word so much.
Puckish. All right, now it's time for our likes and dislikes, where we talk about what we liked and what we didn't like. Joe, for your final likes.
Oh.
Kick us off.
I liked April cutting Leslie off about the pod-based coffee machine. It's subtle, but Amy Poehler's line delivery into being cut off just really hit my funny bone.
Yeah.
The way she sort of stops and it catches in her throat. That was so good. I loved that.
Yep.
I liked that technically Donna kicked them out.
Mm-hmm.
I get
into the technicalities.
I liked that we got a little bit more Donna lore in the final episode.
Oh, we sure did. Makes me so happy.
I like that when it's done right, I really enjoy the flash forward mechanic as a way to show where characters wind up. And I think the series finale of Parks had a lot of fun with it and did it well.
Yeah.
I like Joe's quote, the school cut the math club and math. We just don't teach math anymore.
Of course we don't. Why would we?
I like that Craig is understandably apprehensive of the Parks crew being back in his office,
mm-hmm.
especially given what happened to his yoga clothes last time.
Yep. Yep.
I like that Craig has pipes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I have a package.
Thank you, Crystal. Okay, we're now going to pause for an opening of this package.
I'm going to open it now. Hang on.
So for those of you that are not viewing this, what just happened is a USPS priority box was just handed to Joe by his wife, Crystal. I might have sent it to Joe, and I might have been tracking it all day to make sure it was going to get there in time. So Joe is now holding up said box and is about to open the top of said box.
That was anticlimactic.
It was only a half switchblade. He is now opening the tape slowly. What you will find in there, amidst all of the plastic bags from our plastic bag hoard, is some very good things. Take time to read the note that's on top later. Okay. Aha, there
note
it is.
Is set aside.
Uh-huh. So now enjoy rummaging through all of this plastic.
I'm going to rummage.
Fine. Yep. Now Joe's chucking it over his shoulder dramatically. I believe it's wrapped in that one. Mm-hmm. Talk to me, Joe.
I see what it is.
Talk to me, Joe. What is it?
It's a spaghetti factory car!
Two and I got you one. Oh, oh my God.
I didn't even see it coming!
Are you using words?
I think so! This is amazing! It's got the trolley on it!
Yeah.
Come on, focus camera. There it is. It's got the trolley. It's got the spaghetti factory trolley.
There it is. Right there.
That is
incredible.
You
now have your own spaghetti factory keepsake cup.
This is amazing.
Is that not the perfect ending?
It is. Holy cow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well done.
Yep. There you go.
Thank you, Joy.
Carolyn just said, kind of thought it was going to be the flower pen. I could have sent the flower pen.
Carolyn!
Doggone it.
No!
Carolyn, you're 2 for 2. I'm so proud of you. First tuna can, now the ultimate pen. Mm-hmm. I see you. I see you, Carolyn.
All I know is if the flower pen shows up here, I know who it's going to next.
Carolyn.
No, but seriously, thank you, Joy. This is amazing.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Someday we will go to a spaghetti factory together.
We will.
So there you go. All right, you can continue with your likes now whenever you're ready.
Whenever I'm ready, as I just recover from this explosion of emotion. That was incredible. Seriously, that was incredible. Wow.
Clutch delivery by Crystal.
Clutch. Absolutely clutch. Okay. Getting back on track, I like Craig having pipes. Uh-huh. The guy can sing. I like that Craig's reaction to Typhoon buying him a drink is very Craig.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. I like that the tax break is substantial.
I mean, it is.
That's a very Craig detail to point out.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Andy will miss all of the franchise restaurants that definitely won't be in DC, such as Taco Bell and KFC.
It's a rough life in DC.
And I love Ben's lamplighter costume.
He is all in.
The level of detail in that is fantastic, and I love it.
Yep.
Yeah. I like that Gameplay Magazine called Ben's Cones of Dunshire sequel punishingly intricate.
Is that like nerd speak for good luck?
That seems like the perfect compliment for Ben.
True.
Somebody who appreciates its difficulty and its intricacy seems perfect for the creator of Cones of Dunshire.
Yep.
It's still one of my favorite series moments of all time when Ben wins Cones of Dunshire against the Grizzle people.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So I any reference to Cones of Dunshire is fantastic.
I agree.
And as I've kind of done with producer's cut episodes before, ever since we had to switch over to watching on Peacock, which we've had a notoriously spotty history with, I was not thrilled at the switch. And one of the reasons I'm not thrilled is they did this for The Office, where when you watch The Office on Peacock, when you're just watching the normal series, you'll see the normal episodes that aired on TV, the broadcast episodes. And then they actually have a different show called The Office Superfan Episodes, where you get to see only the producer's cut episodes, only the extended length episodes. So you get to choose which one you want to watch, if you want to watch the normal series or if you want to watch the producer's cut series. So I kind of try in my own commentary to stick to at least what I remember. It's not a hard and fast thing, but at least what I remember was the main broadcast episode, just because I know that there are probably some people who aren't watching on Peacock, whether you're watching on DVDs or just from your memory of the show, that wouldn't have any clue what some of that stuff is. But there was a producer's cut moment that absolutely cracked me up, and that is Andy busting out the Taken monologue on Dr. Saperstein. That was
great. He just owns it.
Yep. Because I mean, you don't see it coming, and then he just switches gears so fast. I love it. And I think this episode is because that's when Chris Pratt was really gearing up for his Marvel stuff. He had already done the first Guardians of the Galaxy. But man, the physical transformation that he's gone through is so obvious in this episode. I mean, he doesn't even look like the same Andy hardly anymore. So
right.
That's always interesting when watching the series finale. He looks so different.
Yep.
And then I like Leslie's relief that Andy and April's baby has a normal name. I like that she just can't help herself.
Oh, okay.
In that moment.
Jack.
I like John Ralphio's general energy in his first scene. Just the air hockey puck just bouncing all over the place.
Yep.
I like the quote, "Will you pretend to be my wife for an insurance scam, but then we fall in love for real?"
That reminds me of Jason from The Good Place.
I still have to watch that show.
Okay, well, just like Jason is also this puckish type character.
Okay.
Of just idealized everything, but no touch with reality whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So that's a very Jason from The Good Place reference.
Okay, it's on my list. So when I finally understand for myself what that reference means, I'll text you and I'll be like, "Joy, I get it. It's a Jason thing."
And then I'll all caps text you back, "I'm so proud of you."
And then I love everything about John Ralphio's funeral.
Yep.
It's so good. It's even, if memory serves me correctly, it is a producer's cut edition when he says it's God's idea. I'm just the vessel. I don't remember that being in the broadcast version, but that's such a great line. It's God's idea. I'm just the vessel.
Yep. Yep. And he says it's so straight faced.
Yes. And then it gives us the meme. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. I love that that didn't actually exist. The show created it, and then it took on a life of its own.
Yes. It is perfect.
I like that Jam is back.
Uh-huh.
I like the 21 stamp salute.
That was one of my favorite moments, not gonna lie.
It's so good.
Boom. Boom. Boom.
That's such a genius bit. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that little callback to Jerry's, really, I think his passion in life of being a notary public.
I tried to look that up, and unfortunately, it's not a real thing. I don't know why the Notary Association has not picked that up.
They really should. They really should.
Can't believe them.
I like Bobby and Shauna getting married.
Of course they did. Also, wow. Yeah. A whole spinoff with just the two of them? Yes.
I like that Bobby totally remembers giving Shauna gum. That was great. I like Ron becoming 51% owner of the Lagavulin distillery.
Mm-hmm.
I also like Ron becoming superintendent of Pawnee National Park.
Yep.
I like Ron canoeing to Willie Nelson's buddy. I like the Biden cameo.
Yep.
And as far as like character development, story arc stuff goes, I like that Leslie actually can kind of keep it together around Joe Biden now. When meeting Joe Biden before, she just completely liquefied and couldn't even speak coherently. I think it's cool because it's a little subtle way of indicating she now understands sort of her own value, her own power, her own place in this.
Right.
She understands that she is on that level now. Yeah. And I thought that was really cool. I like that Jen Barkley is back.
Sure she is. Mm-hmm.
And not only that Jen Barkley is back, but Jen Barkley is everywhere.
All the time.
I like Leslie pushing Ben out of the way when she sees Anne.
Classic Leslie.
That was so good. That was so good. Just instantly, Heisman, boom.
Yep.
Guys, Anne's here.
Anne's here. Anne's here.
I like Andy not remembering Chris's name.
Yep.
Good old Chip Traeger. I like that Ron took Tom's quiz and he's a Ron.
Good job, Ron.
I like Ben pulling the fast one on Leslie and announcing that she's running for governor.
That was a very heartwarming moment.
It was. It was. It harkened back to all the things that Ben did for her and the ways that he showed up for her when she was running for city council. And that was just awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
And then I like that Leslie gets a library named after her.
That was one of my favorite things ever.
That's so good.
Yep.
Because we really haven't had much in the way of the library jokes since Tammy 2 was around, and that's been a while. So I like that
since the eradication of the Tammy 2 virus.
So I like that they kind of keep just drawing all these little threads back to previous jokes. Like, I feel like there's a lot of punchlines that hit in the series finale really well.
Yeah, Carolyn just said she looked up the quiz and she could only find shady things with too many ads.
Ooh, steer clear, Carolyn.
I'm glad you looked that up because I did not even think to look that up. Nerds unite.
So that is it for my likes. Joy, what were your final likes?
I, of course, have a lot of them, so I'm going to try to go through them pretty fast. I just love everybody being together again. I love the structure of this episode. Everyone gets their story resolution and no one gets, quote, killed off. I put that in there because of that random fact at the beginning of Chris Pratt wanting a dark ending. As Joe said last week, it really is a saccharine sweet ending. Mm-hmm. I adore the coffee pod fight musical complete with costumes. And I do need to tell you, I spent a significant amount of time on the interwebs trying to find a coffee decanter costume and they don't exist.
Wow. So that probably means that props master Gay Perello created that for the show.
I want one.
That's amazing.
I want one. Like, how do I make my own costume that's a coffee decanter?
It looked really good, too.
I know. I know. I love that one arm was just the handle. So yeah. You can't even use that arm. You only have one sticking out. I love the book, Thanks, Form the Memories. Of course, Leslie would put together a scrapbook of forms. Classic. I love Donna's flash forward and that it was first. I don't know about you, but for those of you that have watched Schitt's Creek, she looks so much like Moira Rose when she's showing off the house to the prospective buyers. Made me so happy. Very Moira Rose energy. And Teach Yourself is amazing. That was brilliant. I love Craig. His entry of, I am calm. I am grateful. I am Craig. What else would he be? I love that that got added in as part of his affirmation.
Yes.
I love the Craig Typhoon storyline and Ron is the best man. I love that old Craig has thousands of regrets. And most recently, this trout. I also want to write on that glass airplane that Crayfoon was on. The last trip to the fourth floor made me so happy. Of course, Kyle's up there. Where else would Kyle be? I forgot about Kyle until, of course, he's on the fourth floor. And I love that Kyle just assumed that Leslie wanted him to go to maintenance. And he's like, sorry, look, I'm busy. She's like, Kyle. I love Andy not thinking that Taco Bell, KFC, and Pizza Hut weren't national chains. Fun fact, where I grew up, we had all three of those in one building and we called it Kentucky Hut.
Okay.
So there you go.
I've seen two in the same building.
Oh, we had three.
Three. That is impressive.
We used to go there all the time. during the reading program when we were kids, you know, turn in our little slips with all the books that we read and get that free personal pan pizza? Mm-hmm. That's okay. What's up at Kentucky Hut.
Okay.
I love that Macklin and Janet Snakehole are still working their storytelling. I love that in that story, the Sapphire has the power to activate the Cuban Missile Crisis. Once again, Andy trying to use big words. That sounds fun. I love Ben and Leslie's outfits. Sandra D. O'Connor. That's brilliantly hilarious and very niche. I love Ben and Leslie's parenting-ish of April and Andy, like giving them the chance. Like just that relationship has grown and matured mm-hmm. so much where basically Ben and Leslie are the safe place for April and Andy to figure out what they actually want.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that it came down to the principle of being a team.
Yeah.
Like that's something I've loved about being married is it is yeah. being a team. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that Jack's full name is Bert Snakehole Ludgate Karate Dracula Macklin Demon Jack-O-Lantern Dwyer.
Jack for short.
Try writing that on all of your forms for the rest of your life. I love that JR has a terminal case of get me to the front of the line at Six Flags. I literally heard about that on a podcast not long ago. So I'm just like, wow, okay, that's real. I love the Tom and John Ralphio handshake with blowing snow off your hand at the end. And John Ralphio saying, it's a winter wonderland. That was just a funny little thing. And his small thing of, I'm going to be sad to see you go because I've finagled my way onto your family phone plan. And when you leave, that all goes away from me. Hush, child. Hush, 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 hush. I love the don't be suspicious segment. I have been waiting the entire time for this.
The entire time.
Finally here. And of course they blew it, which makes me so happy. And then they're harmonizing. Did you notice they're harmonizing?
I did.
Their harmonizing was amazing.
I did. Made even more amazing by the fact that I think that whole thing was improvised.
Good. Good. As it should be, because those two are brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Jam's ideal ending was being a hibachi chef in Florida. Seems about right. He's done with dentistry. He's done with politics. Now everybody is in awe of him all the time. And he gets to play with fire. I love that Diane made Ron install, quote, luxury items like a driveway and faucets. Good job. I laughed out loud so hard when they showed the cover photo of Tom's book and it was him with the tiny cup.
Yes.
That photo has made it through the entire series.
It has.
Over and over and over again. His seven types of successful people. Andy is loving, exuberant, and open-hearted. April's individualistic, intense, and intimidating. Ben is level-headed, tactical, and calm under pressure. Leslie is leader, tireless, and optimistic. Ron is self-reliant, uncompromising, inner-directed. Donna's mysterious, adventurous, and confident. Or you could be a Tom, a brilliant, trend-setting icon. But who do we not want to be? A Gary. I just love Gary as mayor. Like, I would thrive working for Gary, probably, I wasn't irritated at the inefficiency.
I think other than that, we all would thrive working under Mayor Gergich.
Yep. I love the detail that Brandy Max is city council president. That was amazing. I love how Gail never changes. I love that, of course, on Gary's tombstone, his last name is misspelled. The 21 stamp salute tickles my funny bone every time. I love that what Bobby needs when he's sad is gum. And he gives some gum to Shauna Mulway Tweep. And next thing you know, remember how you offered me gum when I was sad? You're nice too and so smart. I just want to give you gum forever. Aww. I love the small details of Ron resigning from a very good building company.
Yes.
Because he just goes after what he wants. And he does it solidly. He does it with confidence. He's like, I've done everything I can do here.
Yep. There's no...
He's already empowered everybody. The systems are already in place. Like, all right, bye.
There's no dithering about. He just knows and does.
Yep. And then at the end where he says the line... It's time to go to work. And he takes the canoe out onto the lake. His smile in that scene gave me goosebumps.
Yes.
I just like wanted to savor that scene for forever and ever. The Biden cameo again, so funny. did you notice when Jen showed up, she was like sniffing?
Yes.
She's like trying to sniff out. Where's Ben? I'm gonna find him. And then she
does. I love that.
I like that the show predicted all signage outside of public buildings as in 2025 is now holographic.
Which yeah, I feel cute. Like we don't have a whole lot of time left to make that happen. So I don't know what I put our chances there.
Zero. Joy says zero. I love the Anne and Chris cameo and their kids. I love that Ron's Ranger uniform is covered with duct tape, covering basically every piece of info on there. Yeah. I love Leslie and Ben prioritizing their togetherness first before the governorship.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that last segment, all the flashbacks that they did of episode one, you know, pushing the guy out of the spiral slide, the time capsule episode, Ron giving the little girl from the day camp a claymore mine, Gary showing the kids plants, the Easter egg hunt, kaboom. Thankfully, they didn't show Keith or I might have had to yell about it. And the trash truck episode, those flashbacks made me feel so warm inside. Like, I'm excited to watch this series again without this podcast as like a motivator for me to do it and see what warms my heart again. Because I've looked at this with such an analytical mindset for so long.
Absolutely.
It's going to be super interesting.
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean.
I love that Leslie got an honorary doctorate. And they dedicated the library to her. And I love the amazingly fun outtakes during the credits.
Yes. I wish more shows would still include outtakes in the credits.
Yeah. That would be amazing. Amazing. I have some mid-likes. This isn't going to be a surprise, but Leslie forcing a celebration of everything they've done as a group. Like, I'm glad they cut her off and they're like, we're not going to listen to your monologue. Like, let's move on. Come on. Nope. And also my bid, like, when does Saperstein care? Like, since when does he care about medical ethics?
Yeah, definitely.
What? No. Jam's last present to Leslie. It's a redo of the Yoko Ono and John Lennon last photo shoot, except with Jam and Leslie's faces. On one hand, it makes total sense that Jam would consider himself on the same level as John Lennon.
Yeah.
And also that he would want to give that to Leslie and think that she would want that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that.
I just love that somebody actually had to paint that picture.
That was in the creative room. Everyone's like, no, his gift should be. And then somebody got excited about it and it got yes anded. Yeah. And then next thing you know.
Somebody had to spend several hours with a canvas and an easel and paint creating that painting.
It's so good.
It really is.
Next mid-like is Tom's failure documentary, which was by Tom for Tom. Sure, it's part of your processing, but really, Tom, get over yourself. And my last mid-like is the mayor's office is the same office as Ron ate steak in. Jam took over from Leslie, and now it's Gary's office because that fake green fireplace has been everywhere.
Yep.
I know that fireplace.
Good catch.
Mm-hmm. What did you dislike, Joe?
Just a couple of things. First of all, I disliked that we do not have airplanes yet, like the one in Craig and Typhoon's flash forward.
Why?
Because
I want them.
I just feel like that would be so cool because in planes that we like commercial airliners that we fly now, you have this tiny little window to look out.
It's infuriating.
And most of the time you can't really see anything cool. Having a plane that was just glass, which I'm assuming just because this is the future, has the ability to be shaded and it doesn't fry you on the inside, you know, all those things. That would just be so cool. It'd be like a submarine, really, but for the sky.
A sky marine?
Yeah. Like, even
an
if
an air sub?
Even if they weren't all replacing all the commercial airliners. Like, if they were just an option, I'd be cool with that.
That would be pretty cool.
But that would be cool. Second dislike is that we don't get to see Diane make a return in the finale, mm-hmm. and that we don't see her at all in the final season. You know, I get real world scheduling conflicts, but I feel like it just takes away from Ron's arc a little bit, that he goes through so much personal development around his romantic life and his marriage to Diane and the kids, and then we don't see them at all.
That's accurate.
So that's just a bit of a bummer. So that's my other dislike. What did you dislike about this episode?
Leslie bringing a palette of tissues. Really? Also, the scheduling, like, Leslie really thought she could leave on a plane at 11 a.m. Like, she'd have to be at the airport by at least 9 or 9:30 a.m. Uh-huh. There's no way she could fully say goodbye to everyone in 2 to 3 hours, even if they did quick goodbyes. And I just don't. I mean, good on Ben for having the backup plans. Yep. My next one is they just don't teach math anymore in Seattle in 2023. So that's the future that we are living in now. No math in Seattle. I don't like that Tom butts in and still assumes that Anne has feelings for him. And then he does the awkward, like, you're out of my league and you just need to move on. Like, no, Tom. Stop it. And then I just felt so incredibly sad when during the credits there was that last scene where the cast was all huddled together and they said, and that's a series wrap on Parks and Recreation. My insides just went, oh.
Yeah. Like, that's up there with the shot that you can look up. You can look this up on YouTube. Viggo Mortensen's last shot as Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You can actually see a behind the scenes clip of when they filmed that and they announced that's Viggo's last shot, everybody. And just the emotion that you could feel in that moment. This was the same level as that. You got everybody together. I mean, these actors and crew have been together for years making this thing.
Yep.
It's just I think it's a special thing to just have a little bit of a glimpse into the feeling of this thing finally coming to an end.
Yeah. Yep. And with that, it's time for the coronation of the beautiful rule-breaking moth, the segment in which we choose one specific thing that was the breakout star of the episode, Joe.
You know, it's hard. It is hard to pick one specific thing about this episode in which there is so much to love. But I think the thing that just gives me the most sort of delight and intrigue is the Secret Service tease in Gary's funeral flash forward. So you can very safely assume that one of them is president, and you just wonder so many things. So just that little Secret Service tease in the flash forward for Gary's funeral, that's probably one of my favorite things, at least this watch through.
Yep.
What about you? What's your beautiful rule breaking moth?
The happiest moment for me at the end, amidst the sadness, was just the ultimate irony of Leslie getting her doctorate and then a library named after her. That warmed my heart so much. It's the ultimate humbling for someone who is Leslie.
You got to imagine that, like, somewhere in a prison cell, Tammy too is watching that on the news and just starts laughing.
Yeah.
I love
and
it.
And now
it's time. It's time. Time.
For the shaming of the Jerry, part of the show where we shame one particular thing for bringing the episode down or being unnecessarily annoying, Joe.
Okay, so this is where I might get slightly controversial, so just hang with me for a second. But a lot of reviewers talk about how the Parks and Recreation series finale is saccharine sweet. That's a word you see in multiple reviews, that it was almost sickeningly sweet, because everybody got like their perfect. So someone's having a fight.
I got it. We're fine.
But yeah, so everybody gets like their perfect ideal situation, happy ending out of the main cast. And, you know, on one hand, I don't really mind it, but I could totally see, you know, as a reviewer, how you would come away with that conclusion. Mm-hmm. And I think a way that you could have avoided it, that you could have just put the perfect little bit of bitterness in there to counteract the sweet, would be to not give Tom as perfect of a happy ending. Because yeah. out of all the main characters who have been around since the beginning, I don't think he deserves it.
Yeah.
And I think that it might be true to his character, but the reason why I don't feel like he deserves it is that his arc does not involve much growth. Because I thought yeah. about it when I was watching the finale, his character ends the series still being rude and shallow to his friends who have gone above and beyond for him time and time again.
Yeah.
It's like he still hasn't grown enough that he can't be nice without being rude first. And to me, Tom's biggest redeeming qualities are Lucy and his friends.
Yep.
Not necessarily any growth he's experienced himself.
Yeah, so that's accurate.
I think maybe where the finale tips a little bit over the line is the fact that he gets the same level of success as everybody else in the end. When yeah. for him, I don't know if it feels deserved for me. So yeah. I think if I'm looking at this from a writing perspective, if you wanted to make the finale a little less saccharine sweet, maybe give Tom, you know, he can still be with Lucy and stuff like that, but he doesn't need to be this like super successful, you know, New York Times bestselling author. You know, he can be in a normal place and that's fine.
Yeah.
So that's my Jerry. Who or yeah. what is your Jerry?
I fully agree with you on those statements. And also, I'm sad that there was no flash forward for Anne and Chris.
Ooh,
I didn't see.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything with their story. So that feels a little unfinished to me.
Yeah. Although I am at least glad that we did get a what felt like a little bit of that in the like in the reunion episode, the pandemic episode.
Yeah, that's true.
What was the joke? I can't remember. My episodic memory is failing me here at the 11th hour. There was some joke involving Chris and a panther. I remember being funny, but I don't remember what it was. Anyway, it was funny. The word panther was said. It was great.
That's amazing.
So that means it is now time for the final awarding of the Little Sebastians, the ceremony in which we rate each episode against the entire catalog of Parks and Recreation episodes by awarding it between 1 and 5 Little Sebastians. 1 obviously being the lowest and 5 representing perfection, the most magical episodes of all time. Joy, how many Little Sebastians would you rate One Last Ride?
I feel like I would be doing it an absolute disservice if I did not give it a beautiful 5 and name a library after it. What about you?
Same resounding 5. I'm sure it doesn't come as a huge shock to anybody, but this episode is one of the best in the entire series. It's the perfect series finale to wrap up the time that we have spent in Pawnee, which means that this final episode of Parks and Recreation is the final episode that we induct into the Parks and Rewatch Hall of Fame.
Yep. Yep.
All right, everybody. It is this that is time.
If you want to unmute and join us in singing, Where in the World is John Ralphio?
So, Joy, would you like to lead us forth in song once again?
Where in the world is John Ralphio?
Yeah.
Beautiful. inspired, dare I say, inspired.
Thanks for playing, everybody.
So we actually don't need to ask the question, even though we sang, because we found him.
We found him. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. So, don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
In some way or another, he is on his way or trying to get to Tajikistan.
I said, I think he's in the back of a cop yeah. car trying to get to Tajikistan still.
I could totally see that happening. Maybe he's trying to muster Randy and the gang to bust him out.
We'll see what happens.
Would definitely watch a spinoff series about him trying to get to Tajikistan and the ensuing chaos of attempting to open a casino there. So, yeah.
There's Man, that.
We're moving through this. It's heavy. But it is time for Johnny Karate's Karate Moves to Success. Starting with the final chop.
Chop, chop, chop.
Joy, do you want me to start this one or do you want to go first?
I think you should go first.
Okay. So I would just like to karate chop that the riot is officially over.
Yeah.
Although I have to say it's been a really great one.
It has been a really great ride. Yeah. I would like to karate chop that, as well as how gum flavor and malleability don't last long enough, in my humble opinion.
I agree.
Yeah. Just trying to keep us grounded, you know?
It feels like the technology behind that, we should be further along there.
Come on, people.
You know, I'm not expecting like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory levels.
I am. Get your expectations higher.
That is totally fair. That is totally fine. I want to live in that world. I do. I absolutely do.
Who are you going to be nice to?
So on this one, I would like you to go first, and then okay. I'll go.
I just listened to episode 216 of the We Can Do Hard Things podcast. They interviewed poet Ross Gay, and his thing is all about noticing delight around you and calling it out. And it's kind of the intersection of delight and gratitude. So might be nice to someone is, even in the midst of the sadness of this being over, do the best you can to see delight around you. There's so much good happening everywhere. It could be big. It could be small. It could just be a cup of coffee in the morning. Find ways to acknowledge the delight around you. Joe.
All right. I have a statement that I prepared.
Okay.
For my Be Nice segment, I'm just going to read what I have written down here.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Dear listeners, friends, and fans, this is my very last Be Nice to Someone segment. In some ways, it feels like forever since we hit record on the pilot episode of Parks and Rewatch, and in some ways, it feels like just a few weeks ago. It's hard to believe how quickly 7 seasons flew by. 7 seasons of laughter, 7 seasons of silliness, 7 seasons spent celebrating the show Parks and Recreation, an undertaking that for me ultimately became about celebrating a dedicated, diverse, and wonderful community. That feels transcendent and appropriate, given that Parks and Recreation is a show about finding joy, meaning, and purpose in the often dull and difficult parts of everyday life, through cultivating and celebrating your people. I am ending this podcast in a grateful place, and I wanted to take a moment to express that gratitude. To our loyal fans and friends of the show, thank you for giving this podcast the life and community that you have for the past 3 years. When we started this podcast, we had no idea the extent to which our world would change from the pandemic. At the beginning of lockdowns, I was working an average of 70 hours a week, feeling the worry and weariness that so many others were. It really is thanks to this podcast and all of you that when I remember those first months of the pandemic, my primary memories are happy ones. We brought a silly idea to life, and you brought your craft rooms, your questions, your conspiracy theories, snake balls, recipe ideas, and a million raccoon memes. Being able to escape to Pawnee with all of you for a few hours each week kept me sane. Mm. It reinforced my belief that joy and laughter are some of the most powerful weapons we have to wield against life's dark and heavy moments. It's my hope that you will take that to heart as you continue on your journeys, and that this podcast provided you a way station of happiness along the way, like it did for me. To my wife, Crystal, thanks for being my number one cheerleader, sounding board, supporter, partner, and my best friend. Most people probably don't know that Parks and Rewatch wouldn't exist without you, and you deserve the credit for that. You are the very best person I know. I love you and I like you. To Joy, thank you for being the Leslie to my Ron. Thank you for taking a chance on a stranger who reached out to you online and immediately jumping headfirst into this crazy thing. You are special. You are thoughtful. You are kind. You are funny. You are brave. You are brilliant and witty. I knew from the start that there was something special in you, that the world would be better for seeing and hearing. And I have just as much confidence that your light will radiate far beyond this podcast in whatever ways you choose to shine it. Thank you for allowing me to have such a special place as your partner and teammate in this podcast, but even more so as a friend and confidant. Thank you for allowing me to share in your journey as you have shared in mine over the past 3 years, as we celebrated the highs and held space for each other in the lows. Richie love fingers always.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
I am, though.
Oh, that was beautiful, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to write that and to share that. I'm so glad I'll always have that to listen to over and over again.
Yeah, as I am just glad that this podcast now exists as a time capsule of this whole experience, this period in our lives. I never, ever imagined any of the things that would happen to either of us when we started this whole thing out. And it's just been such a special thing to share in those journeys for the past 3 years. Yeah. So... Yeah. With that, for the
now
final...
Now you want me to sing a song?
For the final time, Joy, take us to that outro.
Okay. I have feelings. How am I supposed to sing when I have feelings?
I don't know.
Up in horsey heaven, here's the thing. Trade your legs for angels' wings. And once we've all said goodbye, you take a running leap and you learn to fly. Bye, bye, little Sebastian. Miss you in the saddest fashion. Bye, bye, little Sebastian. Your 5,000 candles in the wind. Okay, now that I did the real verse one, I need some words. Please give me some words to improv so I don't feel so sad.
Suspicious.
All right, Casey, I'll see you. Over in that graveyard, everyone's mourning. John Ralphio, we think he's gone. But if you look a little closer, you see people leaping and singing harmony. Don't suspicious. Don't even think about suspicion. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. What's next? And then one day you look at your friend's gaming table. It's intricately... What did he call it? Intricately...
Punishingly intricate.
Ah. It's punishingly intricate. Where was I? And then you realize it's the cones. It's all about the cones.
It's all about the cones.
And then in another scene you notice everyone looks so old. And suddenly you realize someone is the president. And it's time. It's time to go. And where was I fought the word. Where was it? Let's go to the old spaghetti factory. That's where I'll meet you in the trolley.
Like that one.
We gotta get some Italian sodas.
We can put them in our cups.
And then we'll have souvenir cups. And now we lower Gary into the ground. We don't want to be like Gary, but yet he's the best of us all. And now that we say goodbye, get those notaries in there for the last loot. Stamp, 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 go all the stamps.
What do they go?
Stamp, 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 go all the stamps.
Because they're notaries.
Get an official 21 stamp salute.
Because they're notaries.
Now Leslie's got a library.
She's not a notary.
And it's the ultimate snub to her. And there's one more character I would be remiss if I didn't mention his name. Some people call him Brandaniquitz, but we know he's really just great. Where did you go, Mark Brandaniquitz? I wish I could have seen more of you and they would have treated you better.
Hashtag justice for Mark.
Justice for Mark. Where did you go, Brandaniquitz? Your 5,000 candles in the wind.
Also not a notary.
Correct. Stamp, stamp, stamp. Go with stamps. All right, Joe, take it away.
Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us, especially for our wonderful crew of patrons hanging out with us for our very last ride. If you would like more Parks and Rewatch in your life, you can check us out on Instagram at Rewatch Parks. You can join the official Parks and Rewatch fan club on Facebook, which I'm sure will remain active even after the show is done, because that is community-led and there's so many of you wonderful people on it already. If you would like to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/parksandrewatch. And again, what I would really encourage you to do if you want to support the show is sign up at the $1 a month interim mayor of Pawnee tier. That is the lowest tier that Patreon would let me set. That tier gets you access to everything that we have ever created, all of our bonus content, all of our video content. And what that does is that helps us keep the show on all the services that you've been listening on, like Apple Podcasts, like Spotify, because it's not free to do that even after you have stopped uploading new episodes. So basically, that is the way that you help keep this time capsule existing. So for $1 a month, you get access to all the bonus content that we've ever created on Patreon, and you help keep the show on the air, both for yourselves, for us, and for people who may not have even discovered the show yet, and are gonna just binge right through the whole series. If you are an email type of person and you would like to send us an email, you can email us at rewatchparks@gmail.com. And if you have enjoyed our show, it would mean the world to us if you would leave us a rating and a review where you can do that on whatever services that you listen on. Reachy love fingers to you all. And for the final time, thank you.
And now we all unmute. And what do we say, friends? Bye.
Did you like that? Did you like that callback? Did you like that callback?
I brought back flowers.